Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
We've got our second guest of this series here today as well, Dr. Lucy Mather.
Yeah, I'm the founder of Jai Life, which is a menopause clinic in North Wales.
So I wondered, why has menopause become such a big issue now?
It's to not give that menopause policy just lip service, not have it sort of written and then sitting on the shelf collecting dust, but really to act on that policy and ask women in your organisation and men, you know, what is it that they want to support them within work?
Straight facts. Facts and stats for you there.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Welcome back to HRER. We've got the headphones in again. Dawn's here. This is Dawn, our producer. She's normally sat over there.
Yep.
And she plans the episodes, but Alyssa couldn't be here again this week. So Michelle couldn't be here. You're here, yeah.
I'm here. So it's nice to actually be in front of the camera, actually.
I think you said you were a little bit nervous.
But I am a bit nervous. I'm a bit shy, but
I'm
thriving.
We've got our second guest of this series here today as well, Dr. Lucy Mather. I've pronounced your surname right, haven't I?
Yeah, you have. Thank you.
Nice to meet you, Lucy. It's also your first podcast, we've been told.
It is, yeah. Not my first online event, but my first podcast, yeah.
Not your first Teams meeting, no.
No.
Too many of them, I imagine. And you are a menopause specialist, a GP.
Yep.
Clinical tutor. Anything else I've missed off there?
Yeah, several more roles. Yeah, I'm the founder of Jai Life, which is a menopause clinic in North Wales.
Okay.
So we do online appointments and face-to-face appointments there. And then my background's in general practice, 25 years as a doctor. And 20 years as a GP, which is quite a long time.
some pedigree, isn't it?
A lot of experience there.
Yeah, specialise in women's health, really. Sort of domestic abuse training for Manchester, for IRIS. I'm a clinical tutor at Manchester University. So lots of different roles, but my main role now is at the menopause clinic at Jai Life.
I think that's sort of what we're going to open with as well. Was it the sort of past year I read about the menopause Act is coming into effect next year, I think, and there's going to be something mandatory. Oh, that was it. Employers will need to create action plans around menopause and gender pay gaps. These will be voluntary from April 2026, and they're going to be mandatory in 2027.
Nice.
Straight facts. Facts and stats for you there. I imagine it's becoming more and more relevant in the workplace, and that's why we've got you on. You can ask the first question.
Ooh. Yeah, so you've had so much experience and you're doing amazing, incredible work. So I wondered, why has menopause become such a big issue now? Why more people are talking about it, and what should employers and HR leaders be doing?
Yeah, I think that's a very good opening question. From my perspective, I think menopause has always been an issue in terms of within women's health in general practice, and also obviously in the clinic. It's my bread and butter. I see ladies who struggle with significant menopause and perimenopausal symptoms for many, many years. It's an issue in terms of in the workplace, because obviously more women are in the workplace now than they ever were before. So I think the statistics are something like 5.5 million women are now in the workplace who are ages 45 to 60, and that's your sort of common age group for perimenopause and menopausal symptoms. So if you think about that in terms of an employer, you know, the employers are having lots of women in their workspace who are probably struggling with symptoms, maybe not disclosing them, or maybe not realizing that they're an issue or impacting their life, their work, their well-being. And it's obviously impacting their ability to be at work, days off sick, and then presenteeism. So being at work, even when you don't feel great, you don't feel well in yourself at all as well. Quite a lot of women, especially women I see in clinic, say that they really struggle to be at work, be in work. They feel that they have lost their ability to sort of concentrate, focus, manage situations that they perhaps were absolutely fine to manage in previously, especially in high pressured roles. And so from an employment point of view, it's really significantly impacting their ability to, do their job, really. Lots of women are leaving work early, choosing to take early retirement or not go for promotions or have demotions as well. So, that's having a huge pay impact as well on each individual woman as well. And especially if they're leaving work early in terms of long-term future financial planning around pensions as well. Mm. It's sort of a real significant issue within the workforce. I think also areas of sort of retention as well, leadership, promoting women who are really experienced, really valuable members of your team, and yet they come to a point in life where they just feel that they cannot continue because of the symptoms they're experiencing.
Yeah.
And it's really, really sad. Really sad.
We'll start there, actually. The next section is highlighted understanding menopause at work. Just a bit of context of the questions are going to come under that. You touched on there, like, how these symptoms affect women at work a lot. What are the most sort of common symptoms that you've come across in your time, and how do these affect women?
So it depends, obviously, on the job that the woman has in terms of her role within the workplace, because obviously different women have different jobs, don't they? Mm-hmm. So some women's roles are very senior leadership, especially sort of 45 to 60, because you've worked your way up that career ladder. Some ladies have more physical roles, either working on the shop floor or even out and about in terms of, farmers or, working physically. So it depends individually on each woman. So every woman's menopausal journey is different. Mm-hmm. But the common symptoms really are the sort of psychological symptoms of menopause. So symptoms and the, symptoms around anxiety, low mood, feeling that you perhaps can't do your role as well as you used to be able to do. Imposter syndrome is a really significant issue in this age group. So before, when they were very confident in their role, because of the symptoms that they're having around perimenopause and the way it's impacting them, they then sort of start to doubt themselves, start to doubt their ability to do the job well. And then in terms of, obviously, you have symptoms that physically impact you. So a big issue that I see in clinic is around fatigue. So women feel tired, really, really tired. And there's no other reason for it. So obviously, if they come to see me in clinic, it's really important as a GP that you don't put everything down to menopause. You don't say, oh, because you're 45 or 50, you are menopausal, therefore all of your symptoms are due to menopause. And it's important to clinically look at other issues. But fatigue is a real big issue for women. They feel exhausted. They feel like they're dragging themselves to work. And I suppose as well, in terms of things like sleep, so poor sleep for lots of different reasons. Commonly people think of like hot flushes at night, waking up at night, feeling sort of having hot flushes and feeling sort of sweaty, or hot flushes during the day. And that impacts sleep. But also with respect to sleep, lots of ladies have issues around needing to go to the toilet at night for, to go for a wee. And that impacts sleep as well. Mm-hmm. So there are loads of different reasons why, different symptoms might impact your ability to work. And then also things like muscle joint aches and pains as well, which is sort of one where women don't necessarily associate it with menopause, but often ladies say that they ache. So their hands ache, their knees ache, their wrists ache, they feel stiff. So in the morning, they might have morning stiffness, and often they've been to see their GP and they've had blood tests to look for sort of, rheumatological conditions, and they said, the bloods are normal, therefore you don't really have an issue. Or they might have a diagnosis of osteoarthritis or perhaps fibromyalgia. Now, those are conditions within themselves that do have the right to be diagnosed themselves. But in my clinic, I see women who perhaps have had those diagnoses made or assume that that's the issue that they've got and haven't related it to the menopause, and then haven't related it to the way it impacts their ability to work.
Yeah.
Especially if they're doing a physical job, carrying, lifting, moving, handling.
Yeah, it's a really good point, that. Also the toilet one, because, my bladder's terrible, even at bloody 28. So yeah, it must be really hard then for people to distinguish whether that's like early menopause or just like everyday life, such as fatigue and stuff.
Yeah.
You might just be drinking too much late at night.
Yeah.
Like I've done it before. I'm not a woman, but I've done it before. I've got up to go to the toilet because I've drank too late at night. But yeah.
It can be a normal thing. But often ladies find that it gets worse due to fluctuating a lack of estrogen.
Yeah.
The ability to control your bladder worsens. And also, you know, things like period changes as well. So a lot of ladies, you know, obviously have a regular cycle if they're not on any form of contraception, and their periods can become heavier or change or very irregular as well. And that can significantly impact their ability to work because they, you know, they might be at work and they might have a significant issue with flooding or very painful periods as well. And that's something that they put up with.
Yeah.
They don't realise that that's probably a symptom of perimenopause or menopause, or they feel too embarrassed to go and ask for help. And we see that a lot in the workplace as well.
Would you say coping with that has almost been normalised? Like women almost swallow it because it's sort of part and parcel of life, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's not my point of view. Do you know what I mean? Just to clarify.
Yeah, I think it's really tricky, isn't it, for women. There's lots of reasons why you probably don't feel like you want to disclose really what's going on in your life. So one of my other areas of expertise is in domestic abuse. And there's lots of reasons why women carry on. So they come to work, even though there's all this myriad of mess that's happening in their life. And so they do, whether they normalize it or whether they feel that they should just not disclose that to you as the employer or to their other work colleagues for lots of reasons in terms of, you know, worried about, you know, performance at work or your ability to do the job, or even redundancies as well. You know, if they're looking for somebody to get rid of within the team, if you have shown weaknesses due to your physical or mental health, then, you know, you feel that perhaps you can't disclose that. And that's a real shame because lots of these things are clinically, you know, from a medical point of view, treatable. We can support and help women. There's loads of different options available to you, both from period issues, but also from menopause issues. But you can't help if we don't open up and start the conversation, if we don't start talking about it, don't start sharing what's really happening so that we can, you know, address your weak bladder, perhaps.
I need to stop having drinks after 7 p.m.
I read that. Yeah, I read that.
I need to stop doing that.
But it's hard not to, isn't it? If you have like a few salty crisps.
Especially in winter, I'm like, ooh, hot chockey.
Gone alive.
There are definite like quick fixes, aren't there? So there are definite sort of lifestyle things that you can do to support yourself in terms of, you know, perhaps don't have like, you know, 5 pints at night, you know, 2 hours before you go to bed. But actually, you know, in terms of menopause and perimenopause symptoms and things like that as well, there are other sometimes non-lifestyle interventions that you need to do as well.
Is perimenopause like a less aggressive symptoms of menopause, if that makes sense?
No, not really, no. Okay. So it's very tricky, isn't it? Because there's so many different terms that we use in women's health.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Good job you asked.
Yeah.
So the menopause is basically just a point in time when you haven't had your period for 12 months. So that's an event. But then you're menopausal, so you have gone through the menopause after that event for the rest of your life. So you are always sort of postmenopausal. You've always, you know, after you finish your periods, you've gone through the menopause, you're then postmenopausal. Perimenopause is the lead up to that time. So perimenopause can last 7 to 10 years or perhaps longer in some ladies. And that's where you have more sometimes significant symptoms because they're very up and down. So sometimes depending on hormone levels and the way that your ovaries are producing estrogen, progesterone and testosterone, your hormones fluctuate. And so sometimes you feel okay and other times you feel utterly awful. And that's down to sort of hormonal symptoms, hormonal levels, and how that then plays out in terms of symptoms. So that's the big issue, really, because there's no sort of, you know, flag saying you are perimenopausal, therefore, you know, this is what you must do. It's a really sort of often subtle event that then creeps up on you and then escalates over time. And so some ladies can miss those symptoms because they, you know, life happens, isn't it? You know, you're really busy with work, or you've got sort of kids or other people who are taking your time and effort, maybe got elderly relatives. So you're juggling all these different things and you just don't realise that what's happening to you is the perimenopause. So your hormones fluctuating up and down. But I often say to ladies, you know, look at the situation you're currently in with kids or life or work or, you know, whatever's happening. And do you feel maybe 5 years ago you would have just managed that situation? And if that's the case, then what's changed? And if the situation, the life situation hasn't changed, then it's likely to be more hormonally driven, especially around sort of 45 plus. But even from 40, really, those symptoms can start to occur because of the fluctuating hormone levels. So it is really subtle, and it can be very, very subtle. Some ladies go through it acutely. It just happens, and other ladies don't.
Nice. Were you going to ask a question?
I've got a little bit. It's not on the list at all. It's got nothing to do with like employment, really. I'm aware of like HRT, for example. Is that something you look to implement for people that are suitable?
Absolutely. Yeah definitely. 100%.
Get everything like nice and baseline level and all them. Because don't ask me how or why, but I'm aware of certain hormonal fluxes and how they may or may not happen and why fluctuant hormones are bad for your mood, your skin, your joints, all that stuff. So like HRT, am I right in thinking is kind of the you wouldn't probably jump to it first, would you? I wouldn't think, but it's probably one of the top sort of things you would look at to get someone sort of on the right path.
Yeah, so you look at a combination of things, really, and it is very dependent on what the woman wants, really, in terms of when they come to see you in clinic. So I spend a lot of time unpacking what symptoms they have, how are they impacting their life and their work, what is it that they want to do? So, you know, it's not for me to tell you what to do, but, you know, a woman what to do. But what is it that they want? What do they understand? And do they realise the sort of benefits that the HRT can have in terms of supporting their symptoms now, hopefully managing some of their hormone symptoms? Often it does definitely need tweaking and changing and reviewing, but also the longer term benefits of being on HRT, especially if you go through the menopause early. So if you're less than 50 or if you have a menopause before 40, we would definitely recommend HRT. So there are different clinical situations where we would say, actually, I think you need HRT because you're young and we need to give you the hormones back to protect your bone health really for the future and also your cardiovascular health. But it's your choice. You know, it's your choice what you would like to do. But from my point of view as a clinician, I think it's really important to just make sure that you're aware of all the right facts. So not what's coming up on your social media feeds all the time, you know, not what the latest person who thinks they're an expert in it thinks, but the evidence behind why it is that we're advising HRT for your supporting your symptoms now so that you're able to carry on, you know, living the life that you want to live, but also making sure that you're supporting your health for the future. And that's why I am a real advocate of HRT as well.
Yeah, it's good to hear. I think it's real important to, especially as you get older, like I'm 32 now, which isn't to some people, isn't that old, but like it's a
day. No, not to me.
No. It's the age that men typically start to like dacker off hormone levels, start to sort of come down a little bit. So I get mine checked every now and again, just to make sure that everything's all right. I think it's something that people should be more aware of, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they definitely should be more aware of it in terms of all the options available to them, but also the evidence behind why it is that we choose to, you know, advise on certain modalities. Because obviously, well, not obviously to you, but obviously to me, the landscape of HRT has changed. So, you know, there was a big issue around it in terms of, you know, from the Women's Health Initiative study in 2020s, where, you know, it really wasn't something where people wanted to have it because they were worried about certain studies that had said there were certain issues with it. But all that evidence now is in the rearview mirror, really. And we are definitely better informed about the benefits of HRT. And we've got lots of different ways of giving HRT now, which is much safer as well. So we tend to use a transdermal, so preparation by the skin as well. The issue with taking hormone levels for yourself, but also for women, is that that can change if they're perimenopausal. So if their periods haven't finished, they're still producing hormones on and off. So it's really difficult to get a baseline hormone test level from my perspective clinically. So I tend to look at symptoms unless they're very young. If they're very young, then I'll sort of start to unpack and think about other blood tests as well. So it's important to sort of say, actually, just because your hormones are normal doesn't mean to say that you're not perimenopausal, so you're not struggling with symptoms at the point in time, and not to dismiss you really or minimise your symptoms really. And that's a big issue that I see in clinics. So women come and say, I've had the test, everything's fine, therefore I can't be perimenopausal, but I feel awful, so can you, you know, help me explore what's going on really?
Yeah. Do you think as well, like, employers should be more aware of HRT? Because I actually never heard of it.
You're not?
No. But maybe that's just me being unaware.
For an employer, you know, you're not there to necessarily give medical advice, but I do think they need to be really aware that you're not just giving lip service to having maybe a menopausal policy in place, and you're not just saying, minimising really what's happening. And that you are advocating for your women, people in your appointment, to get better and to seek medical help and advice. So it's not just saying, oh, you know, we'll change your uniform and we'll give you a fan, but actually to recognise that they have to go and seek help and support either through the GP or, you know, a clinic like mine or, you know, other clinics that are available, you know, that they are accessing good advice with respect to what's happening to them and then managing those symptoms. So employers do need to be aware from an educational point of view. So either, you know, online learning platforms like it from yours, or even, you know, having in-house training and events, really, which is one of the things that I do with Jaya Life. So we go into companies and we deliver training events to raise awareness about what menopause is, but also about all the different treatment options that are available and why it's important that you perhaps consider them as well. So that if, you know, a woman comes to her line manager or her, you know, or a team member, you know, they don't, then just don't say, oh, well, you know, give yourself a bit of time, you'll get better. You know, I'm sure you'll get better if you just have a few days off. That you actually proactively manage the situation and really support women to, you know, empower them really to have to create you know, a culture change really, so that they feel supportive in their workplace.
Safe space type stuff.
Yeah, safe space. Yeah, definitely.
Nice. Do you find that men kind of struggle with it as well, like talking about it? Because I know Ollie struggles with it a bit.
Can you tell?
I can tell by your close body language, you sort of like disappearing.
Not to throw you in the gutter.
I don't know. It's not like taboo in my head, but it's just not like it's not a topic I would bring up at the pub. Do you know what I mean? It's
with the boys.
No, it's not something I would share with my male friend group. But it's not to say I'm not unaware of it either, to be fair. I've got a little bit. I know what HRT means.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is more than me, so.
What more could you mean?
For men, I mean, I think definitely it's a conversation which is obviously getting better. I mean, I've got, you know, teenage kids, and they are definitely well-versed in all things sort of female health related, one of which is a boy who's 19. So, you know, they do, I think the landscape is changing with respect to that. And that's the whole thing, isn't it, really? It's getting it in the open. It's allowing people to feel comfortable at talking about something which is actually a normal event. It happens to 51% of the UK population, because 51% are women. And so it's just normalising it. So if we create a you know, culture where it is a normal thing that we talk about, we can then start to then move forward in terms of making change either within the workplace, but also within our own home lives and, you know, our own lifestyle to better manage that situation.
Hmm.
I mean, men, you know, men are in the workplace, aren't they?
And
unfortunately. Get them out.
Not so much in my workplace. But yeah, you know, it's really important that they feel that they are able to talk about it as well. So, you know, in terms of holding events at work, male-only events work really well.
Oh, wow.
And often I find...
Maybe we'll do that.
I find from my own experience, you know, in terms of, you know, delivering events, that actually it's the men who come forward with the questions more, because they really want to know what's going on. They really want to understand what's happening to either their loved one, you know, their partner, their wife, maybe their sister or their daughter. And they're actually really open to talking about it and understanding it more, because they're often at the raw end of it, aren't they, really? They might get the brunt of the wife who feels tired all the time, or the partner feels tired. It changes the relationship dynamic. It impacts your relationship, so your sexual relationship as well. So you women often have reduced libido around perimenopause and menopause. You know, and that creates relationship issues, not in terms of, you know, you having to have sex with your partner, because that's definitely a no-no, but actually, you know, you might, you, as a woman, you might want to have sex and that you feel that you can't because you just don't have the libido. It's not that you don't love him anymore. It's just that you, you know, love him or her anymore. It's just that that's changed because of the menopause. And that's something that can be addressed through HRT as well, but also through a myriad of other lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
So it is important that men understand this, because they are part of our lives, part of some people's lives.
I can imagine from a guy's point of view as well, they might think, oh, my wife's being a bit moody with me, but they don't actually know the extent of the problem.
To be fair, my mum were quite good at like, not well, voicing how she felt about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's 60 some now, I think.
Yeah.
You took me back a bit at one point, Luce, to be fair, with the hot flush comment.
Yeah.
My mum would always say, oh, I'm having a hot do. she'd say that like when she was having like a sweat type thing come on.
Yeah.
I think that's why I joked about it, but I'm not so bothered about talking about it really.
Look at him.
Oh, God, I'm flying.
He's leading the conversation.
I think from that perspective, though, it's important to move that narrative forward, isn't it? So I'm not saying that you did minimise that symptom. It's important. I think it's important to have a little bit of a laugh about it. Say, oh, yeah, you're having a hot flush. But actually also to recognise that has an impact on her life, or maybe it's keeping her awake at night, or maybe it's only one of the symptoms and it's only the symptom that she's choosing to disclose and laugh about, you know, with you. But actually she has a whole host of other things that she's feeling. So social isolation is a massive issue for women. So, you know, they withdraw from the workplace, they withdraw socially, you know, they lose impact and contact. So I think it is really important to sort of move on in terms of saying, yeah, these are the symptoms, but what are we going to do about it? How are we going to get you better? How are we going to manage where you're currently at? You know, what either lifestyle changes that we can make or treatment modalities that we can use really to get you in a better place so that you don't have these hot flushes. You can just go about your normal life and have a good life, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Time for maybe one more question.
Ooh.
I suppose this is kind of employment-based. But what message would you like to sort of deliver, Lucy, to sort of employers for the next year that might help them create an environment to support women speaking about this kind of thing? You got any personal experiences of it?
Yeah. So I think, well, in terms of the women I see in clinic, you know, across a wide range of roles, really, who've requested support when they've been off work, you know, or struggle to be in work, really. I think from a manager's point of view or an HR point of view, you know, it's to not give that menopause policy just lip service, not have it sort of written and then sitting on the shelf collecting dust, or, you know, stay, you know, on the cloud in the storage, but really to act on that policy and ask women in your organisation and men, you know, what is it that they want to support them within work, but also in terms of the next steps, in terms of, you know, supporting them to get better, to continue to be in work and to be a really sort of valued member of your team, really. I definitely ask HR and male managers and female managers to sort of understand what the menopause is, but also how they are able to lead those conversations and sort of open up the conversation, really, so that it's just have an open platform. So you can do that through menopause cafes, you know, menopause, you know, monthly meetings, or, you know, mentor, so peer support groups and things like that as well. So look at sort of more of the things that you can actually do on a day-to-day basis to support your women in your workforce. And I'd ask you to sort of proactively look at the workspace and look at things like, you know, not novel anymore, but ideas in terms of flexibility. So what helps to support your woman in the workplace whilst they're going through this, to you know, whilst they're, you know, accessing support, really. So things like, it's so difficult, isn't it, getting an appointment with your GP. Not impossible. I work in general practice, you know, but if they need to phone at 8 o'clock, or if they do need to go online at 8 o'clock to fill in the form to get access to the GP, then allow them to do that so they can access medical care, you know, rather than just saying, oh, you can't do that, you have to do that in your lunch hour. So all these barriers to accessing support that are in place, you know, just look at them and just say, actually, is it necessary? Can I support you to access help? And so that we can, you know, keep you being a valued member of the team, really. And also, finally, I think, just remember that person in front of you is a valued member of your team. You know, perhaps look back a few years and think, actually, she was functioning as a really, you know, she was really respected in her workplace. She was, you know, performing really well. So just don't use this as an opportunity to performance manage somebody, because it's just completely the wrong, you know, route to go down. You know, remember what they were like before they had these symptoms, you know, treat this as a normal thing that happens to women, and, you know, let's get them better and let's keep them in the workplace is what I'd say.
Culture thing. Let's keep, make it part of the culture.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask as well, do you see many people get forced out of jobs, or they end up leaving?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's really, really common. And I see that a lot in my clinic. So they're either off work or they resign. So you get a lot of women who just say, I've had enough, I'm resigning. And that's really, really sad. Because if you think about it from an employment point of view, you spent time, you know, recruiting, training. They might have been in your organisation for 10, 15, 20 years, a really valued member of your team, and then they just go like that. That's really, really common. And also reducing their hours, going part-time, you know, asking for a change in position. So doing something that they used to love doing. So, you know, women in the police doing nights, things like that, you know, doctors working busy shifts, and then just thinking, I can't do this anymore, and taking a lesser role.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real issue as well, both for employers, but also for women in terms of financial impact. Yeah, I see that a lot.
Yeah, and as well, it's kind of that critical point, isn't it? 40-year-old, where you kind of probably in that senior position as well.
Yeah, 40, 50, 55. I you know, I've seen that with patients. I've seen that obviously with all my professional colleagues and friends. If they don't access timely support, it significantly impacts their ability to do their day job, really. You know, and also, you know, for them to enjoy life. You know, women like going to work, you know. You know, we like being professionals, we like having, you know, having our roles. You know, we've worked really, really hard to get into those positions. Many women have worked incredibly hard at 45, 50. They've juggled loads of different life events through that time, you know, probably 1,000 different, you know, exams and different things that they've succeeded in. They are really good. And if you lose them at 45 or 50, you've lost potentially 15 years or longer of, you know, really good, valued, you know, member of your team. And it's really, really, really sad. You know, I see loads of different women physically, you know, jobs that they used to love. So people who used to, you know, farmers, livery, you know, horse riding, people like that. And they just can't do it anymore because they don't feel physically able to do it. And you manage the menopause, you know, with usually HRT, if I'm honest, and they feel so much better and they're back in work. And it's, you know, it's really rewarding as a doctor to sit there and spend time with women, you know, go through all their symptoms, help work out what's going to work for them. You know, in 3 or 6 months, maybe a little bit longer, they feel so much better, they're back, and they just, you know, they're enjoying life again, which includes work.
We love that.
Sparkles back in the eye.
Yeah, yeah, the joy de vie.
We have got a final little question before we let you go. What guests would you invite on if you've got any recommendations?
Oh, God.
No pressure if you've got anything prepared. It is sort of stumped up on your light.
What type of guests are you looking for?
I don't even know, Lucy. Anyone interesting, really, that might link to sort of...
Employment
law, anything that's coming in the next year, anything to do with, like, equality, diversity, out like that.
I like Jolie Briley. So she was the founder of Pregnant Then Screwed.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've spoken to her.
No, I don't think I have actually.
You know, she's yeah, fundamental in terms of looking at sort of discrimination for pregnant women, you know, and mothers at work, really. So obviously not quite within the area that I work, but, you know, she is, you know, from my own personal experience and the struggles that I've had. And then she came after me with respect to that. And she was, she probably did lots of things that I wished I'd done.
No, she sounds good. If you want to prevent menopause in the workplace, we have a menopause awareness e-learning course.
Lucy did mention it, actually.
Which is CPD accredited, takes just 30 minutes, created by award-winning lawyers. And I built it. So
it's class.
I didn't actually do the content. I just made it fancy. But yeah. If you want to see my fancy work and prevent risk,
buy our course.
Yeah, and it's only £25 per person.
Per person.
Or if you want somebody in place, yeah, in the work.
And also Lucy's here if you need advice.
What an expert! Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's probably the one to go to.
I've done your online course, and I think it's really, really good. Actually,
thank you. There we go. We've got a review.
Obviously, you've got all the employment side of it, which is my area of specialist knowledge. But I thought it was really good in terms of giving you the foundations and understanding about the impacts that menopause has, but also obviously from the legal framework point of view as well. So yeah, I think it's very good. So well done.
We can put an endorsed by Lucy Mather underneath it on the website then, can we?
I don't know how much clout that is.
Oh, jolly good. It's been lovely anyway, Lucy, haven't you? Thanks for your time.
Thank you for coming on.
And you, thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Like, comment, subscribe, and cheers.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier, and more productive workplaces.